Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jarvis here, along with my co-host Han Tron. Han, how are you this evening?
I'm doing wonderful, Jim, just simply wonderful.
Excellent.
We are bracing for a couple more. We're in the hurricane season, okay? So it's always exciting around this time of year down in Florida.
It happens every year, doesn't it? Whether you like it or not, unfortunately.
That's right.
Well, keep your head down. Obviously, I've got family members that are down there as well, and we always ask them how things are going, and Dad always says, "Oh, we're fine." You know. There could be a hurricane going overhead. Well, we're fine. Tough people live in Florida.
It's part of the territory. It's part of the territory, Jim.
Yeah, you get used to it. Well, welcome to Straight Talk, episode number 91. We're screaming towards 100, aren't we, Han? But
that's right.
Yeah. Tonight's show is going to be interesting. You go ahead.
Yeah, Jim. We're not going to hit the 100 by the end of the year, I don't think. Almost.
That's okay.
Yeah, almost. When
we get there, we get there. Well, tonight's show is kind of an interesting one. Han and I have been talking about this for a while, and you might say, wow, this is a bunch of negative stuff. Well, actually, it's not. And what we're going to talk about tonight is don't just kick your contractor off the project. I know you might want to. There are so many times when Han and I, will say to ourselves, just kick that person off the job because they're just doing such a terrible job. But you got to be careful. And so tonight we're going to discuss all the things and the events and the issues around how best to deal with issues that you have with your contractor. And hopefully it's not gotten to the point, but maybe it has. And tonight's information will be something that you can use. Now, I want to start this conversation tonight. Han and I are not lawyers. We're architects and designers. We're not lawyers. But we have been involved in a ton of projects over our multiple years. And we see a lot of things. So we have a set of pile of information that I think is practical for you to at least have. Everything that you do in this has a legal ramification, so you have to review it with your legal team, a lawyer who is licensed to do law in your particular state. So I want to start that off with that discussion. Please always do that. But Han, you and I were talking that there is a pile of questions that have been asked and some examples that I think it'd be good for our listeners to at least hear that we can start our show out with. So you want to kind of go over some of those?
Yeah, I think before we really get into the weeds, a couple of the, we probably want to cover the thing that when you start on the project, looking at, before you break grounds and all that stuff, before you hire the contractor, or sign the dotted line on the contract, things that you should do to protect yourself. And really, this is, again, we're not trying to practice law. We're just sharing information so that, one, that you protect yourself, you protect your rights, and know the things that you need to do so that you don't go off the cuff and find yourself solving one problem, creating 10 more, okay? So initially, to start out is that all contracts between you and your team, that whether that's between your architect or between your contractor or between your vendors, should be reviewed by your attorney. In this particular case, we're talking about construction contract. The attorney could be your dad, who specialized in, you know, estate planning and family law. He could be the best in town. Okay, you love him to death, but he may not be the right lawyer or attorney to look at your construction contract, because the verbiage is very different. The things, it's not about the, I don't think it's as simple as the legal language, but it's all the other things that could lead into trouble if the best attorney for estate planning or family law looked at it and don't know what they don't know, and it could harm you. So the first thing is to have the right attorney looking at your, you know, your construction document to make sure that everything is covered. And please don't look at that as an expense. It's an investment in protecting your interest, your asset, your investment. So that would be the first start, whether it's between you and the professional licensed people on your team, like the architects, engineers, and so on. Whoever you have a contract with, have it looked at by your attorney. Okay? So once that is done, then just proceed with the project. Jim, help me out on this. When the contractors submit the drawing, or submit their number, there is some requirement for documentation that they need to provide to prove, or to at least, clarify and or prove that they have a certain criteria, certain qualification, and that they met the requirement of the local codes and licensure and all that stuff. Let me just draw a few items of things that I'm aware of. They should prove that they have insurance coverage. They need to provide documentation that prove that they are certified to work within the community, because a lot of cities and municipalities across the country have the requirement now that the contractor that's working on a project within their jurisdiction have to be licensed and certified to work in their community.
That's a license in the state, and also may require a license within the city that you're located.
Yes.
May need both.
Okay. And then you have that you're boundable.
That just means that they're financially sound, right?
Right. Is there anything else I'm missing?
References. References.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
references,
one of the biggest things. We're kind of a little off the subject topic, but it's probably good to start the discussion around. And this is one of the things you do when you're looking at putting together who you're going to pick as your contractor. We may do a whole show on just this, but yeah, your references. You want to have several references, and you actually talk with those references to make sure that even though on paper they may look perfect, but in reality, did they perform? So those are the big things that you want to make sure that you have to at least start that relationship with. And you may say, this will never happen to me. Really? why do you buy life insurance? Why do you buy life insurance? I'll never get, have an untimely end. That's why you buy life insurance, on the event that you do have an untimely end. Look at this just the same thing as life insurance. You have to prepare on the unlikely event that you have to terminate your contractor. So, and Han, we've got plenty of examples of where that's come about.
Yep. So what I'm laying out is this is the things that starts on the project. It gives you a good indication whether it's a right fit, because now the rubber is hitting the pavement and time to perform. So some of the, you know, some of the requirements early on in the project, if it takes the contractor a long time to come up with it, you should pay attention. Some municipalities require that the contractor also provide the list of subs that they're going to use. Okay. Again, this is the popcorn that you are throwing down before you enter the forest. So all those, whatever is required, whatever you request, if you don't get it or the municipality don't get it in writing and in documentation, it's going to lead to other issues. Okay, so anyway, let's say everything is come together rather well, let's get into some of the big detail. Okay, some of the questions that we have been thrown at for comments and so on. I'm just going to throw this scenario: a particular owner had hired an old friend as the GC. They know each other for about 10, 15 years. Their kids go to school together. They play sport together. The guys, go fishing together. So they have a great personal relationship. The friend is a contractor. And so a renovation project for the office gets started. Halfway through, the owner is noticing things that just didn't look right. And you say, my contractor friends is not doing things according to code. Yeah, that's an issue. That's basically the first red flag. Now, for us, if that question is asked of us, and it have, my very first question, I'm pretty sure Jim would ask the same question, where's the architect?
Exactly.
And are you building, is your contractor building and renovating your project working from a set of construction documents? Okay. Before, and another statement that was made was the contractor never pulled permit. Jim, can you share your sentiment on that?
And that's happened. And, to our listeners who are sitting there shaking their head, yes, that happens, even in this day and age. It's crazy. And don't get me wrong, it's a blessing beyond belief to have an exceptional contractor who knows what they're doing, who does all the right things, and you have a beautifully smooth project. That's great. And when it's all said and done, everybody's happy. But there's also those times when you run into these situations like Hans talking about. And they could be your best friend for 20 or 30 years. And when it comes to construction, it's like Jekyll and Hyde. They change. Something's different. Construction is one of the most difficult and nastiest professions in the world. Can be. And you have to be so, so, so careful. But, let's jump right into the red flags. Okay, these are the red flags. And once we get through these red flags, then we're going to go into what you should be doing from day one to protect yourself. Red flag number 10. We've got 10 of them here. We'll start at the bottom. Contractor asks for money up front. What do you do, hon?
I think because I've been involved in this conversation some time back, a lot of our dental clients relay their, the renovation and or the building of their home to the renovation and building of their office. And that's two different animals. It's not unusual for a home builder to ask the homeowner to put some upfront money into the project. In commercial, it's just the opposite. We never advocate. The only exception is when you do a big major project in the multi-million dollars, where you have to buy an expensive piece of equipment up front. but those are rare, particularly for dental offices, okay? But you never put any money up front, none whatsoever.
Yeah, if that is a situation where the contractor is demanding money up front, walk away. Don't even sign a contract. Okay. And if you've already signed a contract and they're demanding up front, the answer is no. Okay.
Why is that, Jim?
Yeah, the answer is no. You don't give them money up front. There is a process and a procedure that should be outlined in your contract. It talks about pay applications and what has to be certified by the architect, given to you and effectively given to your lending institution, that they pay upon what was done 30 days previous, what's been purchased and what's been constructed, and a percentage of which is kept back and held back for the very end to make sure everything is done properly. That's your protection. That is your right, and it should be in the contract. You'll find that a lot of things we're going to talk about tonight or things we're going to say should be in the contract. All right, let's go to number nine because we've got 10 of these to go through plus a bunch of other stuff. Number nine, the contractor keeps strange hours. It's 10 o'clock on a Monday morning and there's no one at the job site. It's 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon and all you hear is the mice. You know, that's it. That's a red flag. So either something is going on where the contractor is not properly staffing, there's some issue with the subcontractors, the contractor is not able to properly coordinate, or worst thing is they've got crews working on other projects and they're not fulfilling their requirement of meeting your particular project schedule. Now, you have to be careful with this one. You really have to be careful with this one because it could be on a Monday morning between, let's say, 7 o'clock and 10 o'clock, the contractor is doing something like buying materials or working with the building official or doing something off-site. So that might be an example of, okay, he's actually working on the project. But if you're well in the midst of construction and there's no subcontractors on the job doing anything, that's an issue. Huh?
Yeah, and that's basically like Houston, we have a problem.
Houston, we have a problem. Red flag, big
that's
one.
That's right. Yeah, because contractor is like bakers. They're always one of the first people on the job site. They want to be at the job site, at the first crack of dawn to get things done. It depends on what part of the country you're in and what kind of work they do. Sometimes contractor, it's too hot on outside to be working. So they want to get start early in the morning when the weather is cool and they get off the project, somewhere mid-afternoon. But
yeah, if it's Arizona, for example,
projects
I've done out there, they start at 3 o'clock in the morning and they quit it at, basically noon because it just gets too dang hot. And it's fine. That's
right.
Normal. Right. Okay, let's jump to number eight. Number eight is another big one. You see evidence of drugs or alcohol on the job. Why is that a problem, Juan?
Well, it's not that they the problem is it become a unsafe work environment.
Exactly.
It prevents them from thinking straight. It's an OSHA issue. Okay, mainly it's a safety issue. So when they become impaired, it's no different than driving impaired. There is a lot of a lot of equipment on the job site that are very dangerous to use. So they have to have both eyes open and a clear mind. It's a safety issue.
Very much so. Okay, here's another one. If the contractor won't sign a contract, what should you do?
If they don't sign a contract, you probably should find a different one, a different contractor.
Exactly.
Okay. If there is an item on the contract that you don't like, that is not in your favor, or you don't agree with, then you talk it out with the other person who's providing the service, in this case, the contractor. So you're trying to find a point where both parties win. If the contractor do not want to sign the contract, he's not that serious. Okay? Find somebody else. That would be the best course of action to take.
Exactly.
The contract is the only thing that really truly protects you. Without it,
you're in trouble. You're in the weeds. You're lost in the weeds with no roadmap. Okay, number six, has poor communication skills. And that is not a thing where, you know, they just can't properly talk or they stutter. No, what they're talking about is poor communication skills. What we're talking about is won't return phone calls, won't return emails, won't follow the proper chain of communication, won't provide the necessary documentation. All the things that are necessary in a construction contractor relationship, both with you and them and us, meaning the architect and the contractor as well. So that's a really big issue, because lack of communication will result in a disastrous project. It could do everything from stall the project to cause multitude of change orders that are just big time costly. It costs you money.
Mainly, some of the red flag too is that typically you always hear everybody say, get everything in writing. Okay, your contractor do not like, he say, I don't like to write, that's a problem.
That's a problem.
People have selective memories, particularly when the issue is is not in their favor. So everything should be documented in writing. And if your contractor only wants to do with phone call, it's hard to prove, hard to document. Okay, so those kind of communication should be in not just in a proper protocol, but it also should be in writing. Period.
Yeah, that's a prime example of the unscrupulous contractor who likes to talk about things, and then when it comes down to the end of the project, throws you a pile of change orders, and he says, "Well, yeah, remember you and I talked about that, and you approved that." Remember you and I, we discussed that on the phone, and you approved that. With nothing in writing, nothing to back that up, even taking notes based upon the meeting and sending them a follow-up email to say, this is what we just talked about, will protect you and solve that issue. If not, you know, it becomes the he said, she said kind of scenario. All right, number five. Doesn't follow the guidelines in the contract. That's a big one, because the contract is a binding agreement between you and your contractor, and it should spell out exactly what everybody should do, what you should do as an owner, what you should be expecting for what you pay, what they should do as a contractor, and what is they're expecting and how they're going to get paid for it, and everything else in between. So if they're not following the guidelines, if they're not following and remember the drawings, the construction drawings are in fact a extension of the contract documents. They're part of they should be linked into your contract. It ties in the scope of what the contractor is supposed to be doing. So if they're not following the drawings and if they're not following the specifications, they're in fact breaching the contract you have with them. So that's a big red flag when you see them do different things.
Jim, what if you, because we encountered this a couple of times, okay? The contract between the general contractor and the owner have a certain language that simply say, at the contractor discretion, he can do this X, Y, Z. And it contradicts the construction document. How is that typically handled in your, you know, in your estimation?
If the contractor does, if the contractor does something totally opposite of the construction documents, he's in breach of the contract, and he has to be informed in writing that that is improper. Whatever they've done, let's say they put in the wrong material on a certain wall, and that they have the, you know, basically have the right to repair that. They need to come up with a solution that is approved on what they have to do to repair it, and they have to rectify it. If not, they're in breach, and then that becomes an issue real quickly of whether how severe it is, on whether you can terminate them and get them off the job and get it done properly or not. But, you know, that's the severity of those kind of things. Okay. Number four, manages subcontractors poorly. Now, remember, you're walking on the job. And by the way, Han and I always look out for these kind of things, and we'll help you when we're on the job. We look at this stuff, and we're not just looking at the building. We're not looking at the wall assembly. We're not looking at the floor. We're not looking at the ceiling. We're looking at the other aspects in the relationships. And Han will tell you, I'll tell you as well. So many times we have these discussions saying, this contractor's not doing this right. We need to let the owner know. And it has to do with managing the subcontractors. Now, subcontractors are the guys and girls that do the, you know, do the certain works. Let's say you've got an electrician. Or let's say you have a roofer, and the roofer's a better example. Roofer's a good example. The guys are up on the roof doing the roofing. No one is wearing safety gear. Okay, that's a prime example of the contractor not managing the subcontractors. Okay, you're at risk. They're at risk. Everybody's at risk. Why aren't they wearing safety gear? It's a requirement. Or worse yet, the contractor doesn't properly communicate to the subcontractors what have to be done and when. So let's say the insulation contractor needs to put the insulation in the wall before the drywall contractor comes in and puts a drywall, subcontractor puts a drywall on. Well, did it get done? Well, that's the job of the coordination of the contractor. If you didn't coordinate and properly communicate, and manage it, then maybe the insulation never got in the walls in the first place. And that's not following the contract. That's just poor management.
Jim, how important is it if you have, so we know that, you know, for our client, the term subs may mean something or may not. So what's the difference between the roles and the difference between the general contractor, the subs, and the staff that work directly for the general contractor. What is their functions and obligation? Can you share that?
Yeah, the general contractor may or may not self-perform portions of the work. They may just be a general contractor and have no crews of their own on the job. In which case they would sub out all of the particular works to subcontractors or companies that specialize in doing everything from, everything needed, drywall, concrete, electricians, plumbers, painters, you name it. Okay. Now, some general contractors have crews that they have that do portions of the work. So a prime example would be a general contractor who has a concrete crew. They'll do concrete finishing work, or general contractor has a framing crew. Well, they'll do the building framework, those kind of things. They're still a subcontractor to the contractor itself, but they're in-house. So there really is no difference in the relationship of communication. Matter of fact, it should be even better since they both work for the same company. That there should be excellent communication for people that are in-house as opposed to outside the general contractor's company. Does that make sense, huh?
Yes, actually, okay. I do. So let me interject with a couple of things, Jim. When we talk about coordination and management of the subs, it's not just simply make sure that they're on the job, on time, and doing the work. Because often this is becoming a major problem across the United States, whether it's a small project or a big project. We do have foreign laborers. I was classified in that group at one time. Okay, I didn't speak English at one time, so it was difficult to communicate. But when you have people, subcontractor that work on the project, and they can't read English. They can't read the drawings. Somebody got to translate it for them. That is so. The amount of coordination and attention and management of the subs from the contractor or by the contractor will have to be with more handholding. If they don't, okay, you're going to see problems in your building because they can't read the drawings. We've seen it happen more times than we like to. So that management of their staff is really, really important. So if the contractor is not there on the job, and he have subs that are running around and you can't understand them, you have problems. That's a major red flag.
Very much.
Jim?
Here's a big one. Number three, steals from you. And you may say, really? Steals from you?
No way.
Yeah. And here's how. Here's how it happens. And Han and I always look for this. Prime examples. A contractor, for example, maybe they need 5 pallets of bricks to do your job. Okay? But 10 pallets are delivered. Most people don't know. But at the end of the project, when all the brick is up on the wall, you see 5 pallets of brick being loaded into a truck and taken away. What does that say? That says you probably paid for that brick and that contractor is taking them somewhere else to use them on some other job or putting them in his job storage unit to be used on future jobs and pocket those funds. Okay, that's one of the easiest ways a contractor could steal from you, and most people will never, ever know. So you've got to be very cognizant of what happens. When Han and I are on the job, we look at that stuff. We have an understanding, and we know that, okay, that pile of 2x4s over there, size-wise, should be enough to do the job. Now, why is there 15 piles of 2x4s here? We're only building a 3,000 square foot building. You don't need all that. And
Jim, there is another. It's on the other end of the supply line. That can be done too. In the specification, it is often called out that there is a percentage of material that are to be provided to the owner for repair or replacement. For instance, your ceiling tile. Okay?
Yeah, ceiling tile, carpet tile. Yeah.
Those little things, that's including paint, that's including wall cover, everything that are used on that project, including bricks. There is a percentage, and usually about 3% of the overall material that was used on that building is set aside for future use in case you need to replace some damage or something like that. If you don't get that, then there is some money that was supposed to be spent for that is kept by somebody. Okay, so those little things adds up. One project could be, $1,000, but you do 30 projects a year, that's free money. And it's happened to be yours.
Pretty bad. And okay, number two,
yep,
which is a big one. Doesn't follow OSHA guidelines. OSHA stands for the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. It's a strict government agency that deals with one thing and only one thing only, safety in the workplace. So if your contractor is not following these guidelines and you have an unsafe workplace, that's a major red flag. If you walk onto the job and you see no one with a hard hat on, big red flag. What's that one comedian said, such and such, you know, if you such and such, you know, here's your sign. You know, you're a red man, whatever it was. I can't remember the exact thing. But, you know, that's a prime example. You've got a roofing crew with no fall restraints, or you have scaffolding with no railing system on it. All of that is major, major OSHA violations. That's big, because you may say, well, that's the contractor's responsibility if somebody get hurt. No, it ends up being your responsibility just as much, and you will get drug into a lawsuit if somebody gets hurt or killed on that job in a heartbeat. And it will end up costing you money, whether you think it will or won't. It will. Juan?
Yeah, so it's very important that you stress that the contractor, I'm not sure if the state requires that you have to be certified, but I do believe that is one of the things that a general contractor have to take classes for. I remember before I go on to a project site, I had to go to OSHA certification. So let's say because this happened all the time, and I heard the conversation all the time, is that you are the owner, so why the heck can't you go onto the project site? And why can't you take your family, your kids, and your dog to show them what's happening, because you're excited about the progress of the projects and stuff like that? One is because it's a dangerous place. I think if you have a really, really sharp GC and understand the importance of project safety, you should, before you step onto the construction site, there should be documentation of who came to that project site and what for and when they left. You should have all of the safety gear, since you don't work on it, but you're the dentist, you come into the site, you should be given a hard hat to wear, and you should kick off your leather, your leather dress shoe and put on at least a pair of boots to protect you, okay? Do all those safety things is for everyone's benefit, and particularly you, the owner. So like Jim said, it's a shotgun effect. Somebody get hurt, they'll sue, and they sue whoever they can get that's attached to that project.
Yep.
And usually land up you.
Yeah, usually end up you. Number one, can't solve problems. Okay, if your contractor cannot solve a problem and basically sit, there's always going to be bumps. There's always bumps on a construction project. It's a given. It's construction. And if it's a remodel, your bumps are even bigger chance of having bumps, because remodels are more. If the contractor sits there and says, I don't know how we want to fix that, and says, talk to your architect, or says, what do you want me to do? And is it coming up with options or ideas? It may be time to really seriously look at, maybe it's time we have to let this contractor go, because if it starts out early and you start seeing that, what do you think is going to happen when you get down the road and it really gets more complicated? Now, you may say, okay, let's say my contractor only did one of those things. Well, that's not that, okay, just one of the list of 10 is not that big of a deal. But if you've got five or six or seven of these items on here, it's really time. And so how do you go about solving this? How do you go about doing this? Do you just say, okay, we're done because you didn't do that? No, that's not the way to do it. You have to you have to be totally prepared, and mostly you have to sit down and communicate with the contractor what your issues are. So you sit down with your contractor, have all of your documentation, and you have to document this stuff. That's why, since from the day of your construction beginning, you should be documenting things. You yourself, or you hire somebody to do it, like a owner's representative, to document as much as possible. So you have it all there. And that could be from, okay, first week of construction on these particular days, we had this many people on the job, and these are the subcontractors that are on there, and they were doing these particular things. It could be that simple. But you need to have that information. And if you come to the point where you say you're a contractor, you weren't staffing this thing properly. You didn't have enough people doing the job. And you go, yes, I did. You have the documentation to prove that they didn't. You bring out that paperwork and say, on this day, you had only two people. You didn't have anybody on this day. You didn't have any, and so on and so forth. So you have to document everything. Now, what are the real, real reasons that you need to end a contract? First one is the contractor is unable to complete or incapable of completing the contract. If you can say yes to that, then it might be time to terminate the contractor. The contractor abandons the project and the contract. Let's just say they walk off the job. All right, then that's pretty easy. Then it's, you talk with your lawyer, send them the necessary paperwork and say, okay, we're done. The contractor indicates that they're no longer going to be bound by the contract terms. And Han, we've had this happen. We have had this happen. When the contractor said openly to us and the owner that he's not bound to that. It's not what he bid.
Really?
That happened all the time.
That happens all the time. That's a prime example of not being bound to the terms of the contract.
Let me throw a couple more.
Terminate your contractor.
These
are pretty serious. These are pretty serious conditions.
Yeah.
The contractor commits fraud involving in the project. So they steal or they lie or they do something in the way of fraudulent. When they do that, then you have a pretty good case to terminate your contract. But you have to make sure that you have all of your ducks in a row, you have all the paperwork in place, and you have all the things documented. And when you have that, you're going to be in a much better position to talk with your lawyer and have them do the necessary things to terminate your contract. And you were going to say something?
Yes, actually, it started out small, okay.
Sure.
Like Jim say, there are a few legal binding documents that the contractor uses to guide him through the project. One of them is the contract between you and them. They have to adhere to that. But on a job site, it is the construction drawings that they have to adhere by. So if they, this is a bad habit, okay? The set of drawings could be 10, 20, 30, or 40 sheets of drawings and specification. In general, if they don't read and familiarize themselves with the project before they bid the project, it leads to problem. For instance, if the project architect call out for a certain building envelope, and the contractor just kind of zip by, look at the drawing, and go, oh yeah, this is what we do, and he really never studied the drawing, and he bid the project, and the number come in, and he had a low bid. Now we usually say, everybody should read the drawings and familiarize with it? Have you? And they say, yes, we read everything. But once you give them the contract and they go, oh, I didn't bid the job to provide that building envelope. that's a big issue. Or I did not bid the job to have that type of cladding. That is also a big issue because they lowball because they figure the building is going to be traditional, typical residential grade type of construction versus a more upscale commercial projects with more higher end product. They're going to be short of money, and that just kind of basically slide downhill from there. So we always encourage them to read everything, and if they don't, you will hear it pretty early on. They won't provide documentations of the things that they're supposed to verify and confirm that they're going to buy this or that to install in the building. Those are red flags, particularly that we usually see those, and that's a problem really that is starting to surface early up front. But the construction document is what helped to it holds them to the what they have promised, what they have agreed, and contractually bind to provide.
Right. So, terminating a contractor can be costly. So you have to consider the fallout. You've got to do it right, or you potentially will incur some heavy expenses. And those expenses could be and include loss of profit, loss of wages, business interference. It just goes on and on and on. And, Han and I are not lawyers, but at the same time, we've seen it all happen before. So you've got to be careful. You have to have a substantial reason. We talked about those substantial reasons for why you want to terminate the contract. And you've sat down and talked with that contractor about the issues in advance, and they've still not resolved or fixed the situation. Now, there is one thing in the contract, in contract law, that has to do with the actual process. If you identify an issue, let's say the contractor failed to follow the documents and is not putting up the proper material that was shown on the drawings and specifications, they have and you've given them notice, we've identified it, we've told you, you as the owner gave them notice that it needs to be rectified and cured, you're expecting a response on how to rectify and cure the problem. So they have the right to cure defects. So you can't just go in and say, you did this wrong, get off my job, I don't want to see you again. You just opened yourself up to a major lawsuit. Okay. You have to basically give them the right to cure the defect. Now they have to come back and say what they're going to do. It has to be approved. There has to be a timeline. There has to be any issues of cost associated with it and any other potential costs that are incurred by them fixing that. So let's say they have to tear apart some other work by another contractor. Who pays for that, you or them? Well, they do, not you, because it was their faulty issue, whatever that faulty issue might have been. So, but they have the right to cure it. If they do not come back and cure it in the proper time frame or in the proper way, then you're on safe ground. Okay, but obviously you have to have adequate documentation. You have to have someone who understands construction, like us, giving you the proper information of what needs to be done. So that's an important thing, that you have to give them the opportunity to cure the problem. Because just because they're in breach of contract, which means that they've done something against the contract itself, doesn't mean it gives you the right to breach the contract by not allowing them to have the opportunity to fix it. What our parents used to say, Han, two wrongs don't make a right?
That's right. That's right. Here's an item, Jim, and we encounter it a couple of times, and typically the architect and the contractor have absolutely no legal binding to each other. So And we have an encounter where the contractors say, hey, my contract is with the owner, not with you. I don't have to answer to you. Jim, what ground is there that you're aware of that that contradict that statement from the contractor?
Actually, there's a very important portion of the standard AIA owner contractor agreement that specifies within that who the architect is and the responsibility of both parties on how they are to communicate and work with the architect and what each entity needs to do, meaning what the contractor needs to do and the relationship and what the owner needs to do and the relationship with the third party entity, meaning us, the architect. And so when someone comes back and says, you're not the owner, I don't have a contract with you, and they've signed an AIA owner contractor agreement, I'll say, actually, you do have a contractual relationship with us, and here's why. And you point them right to that section and says, you're required to coordinate with the owner's architect on all matters. It's real plain. It's real simple. And it's followed up by a pile of the previous case law that keeps it proper and gives it strength. So any contractor who comes back and says that, well, I just slap them with that in a heartbeat, and they pretty much shut up and say, okay. Now, if they have created a contract of their own, then you may not have it. You might not have the protection in there. And so you got to be careful of the right kind of contract. And Han, we're probably going to do a show on just the whole issue of owner, contractor, contract, and what has to be in it. Because if you create a solid contract and has all the issues in it, I mean, your contract, I'll give you a little prelude, your contract should have items in it about termination. It should have items in it about notices and right to cure and all the other stuff that define what a breach of contract is so that you're protected. And again, your lawyer, your legal team needs to review all that stuff so that you are protected. Again, construction is a nasty business. And it could eat you alive, or it could be the most wonderful experience you've ever had. And we've seen it both ways, haven't we, Art?
We have. It's a joy to work on a project where, you know, where the contractor is well-versed, well-respected, knowledgeable, and easy to work with, where they value every member of the team and don't look at the architect an engineer as an adversarial member, and they try to skirt around it. We have experienced it a couple of times where the conditions that for the contractor to take the job is to not have any dealing with any engineers or architects on the job, meaning that they have the free run of the project. If they give you a number or a bid based on the construction document and you have nobody on the job to hold their feet to the fire, you set yourself up for failure. So don't agree to that regardless what the number is, because they're going to take it out of the project somewhere, some way, and nobody's there to even tell you better.
Right.
Okay, so it is a joy when you have a good team, and it could be a major headache when you don't.
Right. So, Jim? So the whole issue of terminating your contractor is a business decision. Don't let it be an emotional decision. Don't get into a situation where, and we all know it, we know, how many decisions do we make and they're emotional as opposed to logical? This one, fight all your emotional issues and make it logical. A business decision to terminate your contractor because there are massive financial ramifications if you do it wrong. And you don't want to get into that point. So take your time, double check your reasoning, consult your legal team, consult the architect, have all your ducks in a row, as they say, have all your paperwork, have all your evidence that's necessary. Here's, you know, here's written evidence that I asked them to repair this. I asked them to do this properly. I asked them to keep, you know, their subcontractors to have hard hats on the job. I, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, issue after issue after issue that they failed to perform or they failed to do right. You'll be in a much better position when it comes down to the actual litigation, because it will turn into that of terminating your contractor. There's a rare opportunity when you will, we've seen it happen, but not often, where you sit down with a contractor and say, these are all the issues. And the contractor says, yeah, I'm just over my head. Can we just, you know, can we just work this out so that, you know, I just get off this project. Here's the financial arrangement, whatever it is, and yeah, I'll let you move forward with somebody else. That's happened. I know of it happening one time, but it's like, that's rare. That's very rare. Usually it becomes an instant adversarial kind of thing where the contractor says, I'm going to sue you from one side to the next. And, you know, you let your emotions jump in and say, I'm going to sue you back. You'll never work again in this whole town if I have anything to say for it. You got to be real careful. Don't do that. Don't get into that. Don't fall into that trap. Matter of fact, termination should be done in writing by your legal team. Okay. And that's the proper way to do it with the proper notice. It's all, it should be outlined in your contract about how you actually go about the idea of the aspect of termination. It should be outlined. There's 7 days notice and all that kind of good stuff. So I know we've blown through a whole hour again, hit most of the major points, but there's a whole lot more that's behind this. And again, you know, Han and I like to, we want to at least get this information out there so that you're protected, that you have this background. Heaven forbid you ever have to terminate your contractor. But if you ever get into a position that you have to, you'd want to have done a lot of this stuff in advance so that you have all the necessary information and that you're protected. So, you know, do your homework, do your paperwork, do your notes, and, you know, keep everything in writing. Do not verbally agree to anything. You know, what's our common saying, Han? When the contractor asks, can I make this adjustment or this chain? What does the owner say?
Go and present it to the architect.
Yeah. First. Let me talk with the architect first. Exactly. Because that's the way to protect yourself. That's why we're here. And,
Jim, we have 2 minutes. Can I, let me throw a morsel in there also.
All yours, man. You got 2 minutes.
All right. So there is a lot of, you know, things that telltale sign that there's potential problem ahead, you know, on your project. You know, sometime the contractor will buy just you know, a small amount of material for the job when they should order basically, you know, everything at the same time. For instance, like brick. You don't buy bricks by the pallet. You buy brick by the truckload because, you know, it makes they could be variance and difference in colors and so on. So if you see that kind of activities, there is potential problem. Like we say, you don't pay for anything until it's done. And one of the safety mechanism that's put into the system is that that the contractor have to give you the lien waiver. If the contractor failed to give you the lien waiver, you ask him why. That is a safety mechanism for you, is to ensure that the contractor have paid the supplier and their subs. If you don't have that piece of document, you might be surprised. When you're done, somebody's going to come back and say, Doc, my name is Joe the Plumber, and the GC on the project have never paid me. I'm going to put a lien on your project. So documentations, certification, all those things, if it's not readily available to you at request, you need to check and see why. Okay, so Jim, that's basically my 2 cents. Okay,
that's actually more than 2 cents. You did a really good job, and it's exactly true. There's a ton of other things, and I guess it's pretty simple to say, but I'll say it anyways. That's why you need the proper team members on your project to help you through all this stuff, because you know we eat, sleep, and drink this stuff. Okay, that's what we do. Just like you deal with on a day-to-day basis dentistry. It's really, in my mind, unfathomable to expect you as a dentist to try to fill the shoes of all the things that need to be done when you're doing a construction project. That's why you need a quality architect on the job. That's why you need a quality designer, the right kind of team members, your legal team and everything else, and also getting a quality contractor. It's important. It's very important. So we'll fill in with a bunch of other comments and questions that we've been getting that kind of hit this subject matter in probably one of the next shows or the next two shows. So if, as always, please feel free, send in your questions, get a hold of us if you have any other specific questions, want to talk with us, get us on our website, give us a call. Han and I are here to help. That's why we do this stuff, and we enjoy it. We enjoy it immensely. We've always felt and we feel that there's always a better way. That's why our company was founded. There was a better way to do dental projects. And we've created that, at least we feel we have, in our organization to be able to do that. And we're here to help you. So, Han, I'll leave you with the last word, and we'll sign off for tonight.
Again, like Jim said, we burned through an hour, and I appreciate all of you for plugging in and listening to us chat for that hour. I hope you learned something or a lot of things so that you can use it down the road. In this particular topic, I hope you don't run into a situation where you have to tell your contractor, get off the site, I'm sick of you. Okay, so anyway, it's been fun, and hope everybody stay safe and stay healthy. Until next time, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.